This Week in Radio Tech is supported by Violet Microphones, handcrafted in Latvia for generations, on the web at violetusa.com. And by Omnia Audio, introducing the new Omnia 11, the FM audio processor that's being called effortlessly loud, on the web at omniaaudio.com.
And now, our feature presentation.
Twirt.
Well, that's the thing. If you get it working over barbed wire, this stuff's a breeze.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go. Right. All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's him?
Yeah, all your data belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
And please make welcome from Mukwonago, Wisconsin, it's Chris Tarr, and the Hudson Valley of New York, welcome Tom Ray.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Hello, and welcome in to This Week in Radio Tech. It's Twirt. It's episode number 52, where we're going to catch up on the rest of our discussion on remote broadcast technologies. And I think we got a great show here for you. We're going to cover some things we missed on the part one of the show, and then we're going to cover the stuff that we wanted to get to. Joining, by the way, I'm Kirk Harnack. Hello, glad you're here. Always glad to be here every Wednesday evening live on the Twit Network. And then by podcast, subscribing on iTunes, you can download from our website at thisweekinradiotech.com and watch old episodes of Twirt at odtv.me. So there you go. So I'm Kirk. I work for Telos, and great folks. Love it, love it, love it. And we got some other co-hosts here, though, who want to say hi. Let's reverse the order and run over to Cucamonga, Wisconsin, and talk to Chris Tarr. Hello, Chris.
You know, one of these days I'm going to hold up a huge sign that says Mukwonago. That's where I'm at.
Isn't that what I said?
It's similar, not quite. We are here in the great Midwest in the beautiful state of Wisconsin. I am the director of engineering for Intercom's radio stations in Milwaukee. There's two FMs and an AM, and three radio stations in Madison, which are all FMs.
Cool. You got a lot of responsibility there, dude.
Well, you know, I'd like to think it's responsibility, but really it's more just skating by, just hanging on for the ride.
And the let's move over to the antipathy of responsible. It's Mr. Tom Ray. Hello, Tom.
That's me, Mr. Irresponsible. That would be me. Hello, Kirk. I'm a VP engineering for Buckley Broadcasting and WOR Radio in New York City.
Well, good. And before that, you did a lot of other interesting things. So I think you're qualified to talk to us about our subject at hand tonight. And we, of course, welcome in the chat room. Chris Tarr is so good at keeping an eye on the chat room that, Chris, maybe I can make that your responsibility once again, since you are Mr. Responsible.
Absolutely. The show.
You know, Kirk, whenever we talk about Chris, whenever something goes wrong, he's always responsible.
Now, there is a story of my life right there.
All right.
Hey, that toilet's broken. Somebody call Chris. He's got to go fix it.
If you haven't figured out by now, Twirt, This Week in Radio Tech is a show where we talk about radio technology. And that's not, you know, that encompasses so many things. Anything from phono styli to ribbon microphones to Electrovoice 635s used as hammers, through audio consoles, audio processing, computer systems for playback of audio and automation, automatically recording stuff, satellite uplinks and downlinks, microwave systems. It's almost embarrassing to call the show This Week in Radio Tech, because radio, the job that broadcast engineers do, encompasses so very, very much, even out to the transmitter side. And think of all the IT that radio guys have to do now. Some radio stations and radio facilities have a separate IT department. And in others, the radio engineer or engineering staff is expected to understand and deal with the IT. So, man, we just cover all kinds of stuff. But all of it has to do with getting audio from one place to another and trying to entertain people in one way or another.
Have are I got you that trying right, to tell guys? Us that our jobs these days are full of IT?
Oh, full of IT, yes. It's going to be a quick hour or a long hour. So last week, episode 51 was called Remotely Speaking, and we were talking about older technologies for getting audio from a remote site, say a ball game, a stadium, a Ford dealer, the grand opening of a restaurant or something, back to the radio station to do a live broadcast. And my goodness, we've been doing live broadcasts in the radio business forever and a day. And the technology has been changing. Chris Tarr, before the show started, suggested that we go back and cover a couple things we might have missed. A lot of our show last week covered the topic of Marty transmitters. And that's a brand name, but it became to be a very generic name, like Kleenex or Xerox, where we would do remote broadcast by sending it back to the station over VHF or UHF radio links. And we covered some things like phone line extenders and doing remotes over ordinary phone lines, POTS lines. And we got in a lot of that discussion. One thing we missed was doing remotes over what I would call a nailed up phone line. That is a dedicated circuit from one place to another. Back in the day, churches did this. If you had, because they do it like a regular broadcast from a church every Sunday morning. Or if you did a remote from some regular location time after time after time, you'd install a permanent line, usually or oftentimes just a bare piece of wire, a bare copper wires from one place to another. If the town was small enough, going a long distance, you'd have amplifiers involved and equalization and such. And there were remote units made for that. They'd have a little mixer, one or two inputs and maybe three inputs and some terminals on the back to hook to that phone line. So anyway, taking up enough time, Chris, you said we ought to go back and cover a couple items as well from remote broadcasting from last episode.
Well, I think, some of the people in the chat room were mentioning low-cost alternatives for live broadcasts, especially now with the internet and Wi-Fi being so available. A lot of smaller stations can actually do broadcast-quality remotes now without having to drop $3,000, $4,000 per side for, the high-end IP codecs.
Hit me like a ton of bricks right now. We're doing that right now. We're doing three live remote broadcasts with audio and video to the Twit Network studios in Petaluma, California. So, hey, guess what? You can use Skype over IP to do a live broadcast, right?
Sure could. You could do Skype. There's also, I'll see if I can find it later in the show. We actually have a viewer of Twit who came up with software for doing voice over IP for remotes that actually works pretty well. And it uses, UDP to send the packets out. So there's fairly low delay, and it seems to be working pretty well, and it's still in beta. But there's a lot of things out there. There's VoIP. There's, any number of different. I know even MSN Messenger has a voice over IP thing. Google Talk has voice over IP. So there's plenty of things out there, but a lot of times it's a matter of being creative in how you set it up to get it to work. But now more than ever, it's real easy for your radio station to do pretty high quality remotes on a budget.
Tom, you feel free to jump in here anytime, but I got to tell you, at my employer, Telos, Telos was a very early adopter of ISDN and MP3 technology, the first licensee of MP3 outside of Germany. And we used that with ISDN technology to come up with the original Zephyr. Now, before that, there were ISDN codecs, but with the Zephyr, it enabled you to do a stereo live broadcast using two ISDN-B channels, which was the standard for an ISDN installation anyway, 128 kilobits per second, and you got pretty good quality. And in fact, today engineers kind of know what MP3 sounds like at a bit rate of 128. Our ears have finally become attuned to the slight anomalies of MP3 at 128. But I remember when it first came out, it was like, oh my gosh, wow, that sounds terrific. And it's funny, years later, it sounds terrific, but yeah, I can hear a little bit of this and that in there. So more better codecs have come along. AAC, for example, these are used in not only Telos ISDN codecs, but lots of other brands as well use the AAC algorithm, AAC low delay, which lets you carry on a very natural two-way conversation with little, if any, perceptible delay. So that sometimes that's important. For example, I'll give you a great example of a daily remote broadcast done over ISDN, and that would be the Rush Limbaugh show. Usually, Rush Limbaugh is at an office in West Palm Beach, Florida, or Palm Beach, Florida, anyway, somewhere in Florida, and the calls are being taken and accepted in New York. So Rush has to hear the caller, and when he talks, of course, his voice goes back to New York, is mixed with the caller and the bumper music and all that, and then is put up on satellite. So You know, that's got to be a reliable and low delay connection from New York to Limbaugh's studio in Florida. I don't know for sure what he's got now, but I do know a few years ago he had four Telos Zephyr Extremes there, and for lots of redundancy there, and taking lines that came in from different directions, so that he had a very good chance of being on the air every day. You know, even if somebody crashed into a telephone pole somewhere, since different services were being subscribed to. So there's a daily live remote broadcast. And, you know, that kind of tech is used every day for lots of talk shows all across the country. But a lot of these are, you know, these are usually in from fixed locations. Now, sure, you have other talk show hosts that will go out on the road. You know, I'm thinking somebody like Sean Hannity will normally do his radio show in New York, but sometimes he goes to Birmingham or some other city where he goes in and uses the facilities of some affiliate radio station. And from that station, they've got to get Sean Hannity's voice back to New York so it can be mixed in with the regular, you know, the regular bumpers and such, and callers' voices. And so the affiliates that he goes to will have some kind of an ISDN codec. And these are, you know, they use these because these are reliable. ISDN is a tariff service, so it's supposed to work by law. And so there you have it. That tends to be how it goes. So let's move from that world, which we kind of covered last week and kind of finish up this week, into the world of you know, the modern, modern remote broadcasts. Chris was starting to talk about IP. I think we ought to cover just for a moment the whole notion of POTS codecs. Well, I don't think we really covered this much last week. POTS codecs were very popular for a while in the early part of this decade. And I think with the more and more ubiquity of IP connections via Wi-Fi, and it's easier to get in press boxes and from remote broadcasts, and so many businesses now are connected to the internet, that the need for a POTS codec has decreased. But, you know, Comrex and Tyline and Telos have made some POTS codecs. These really have to run the audio down to a very low bit rate. Basically, it's a modem. It's a, you know, an ordinary dial-up, squeak, squawk kind of modem, and the audio had to get squeezed down to 18 or 20 or 24 kilobits per second, either with AAC high efficiency or maybe some proprietary algorithm. And then those bits would go across a POTS phone line as a modem call might. One of the interesting things about that technology that our listeners might be interested in is the manufacturers of these POTS codecs had to do some tweaking on the modems and the way they worked, because an off-the-shelf modem chipset and the software that runs that is optimized for download speed, right? Because back in the days when we had, you know, squeak squawk modems in our computers, we were interested in faster download, not as interested in fast upload. Well, if you're at the remote end of a broadcast, you're interested in fast upload that is back to the station. And so companies like Comrex, Tyline, Telos had to tweak the software to try to get a good, fast, reliable upload direction modem connection. So you guys have any thoughts about POTS modems? Did you use them yourselves in various broadcasts, or do you still use them?
We use them all the time at WOR. You know, we find in New York City and some other places too. For example, if you go to a hotel, you might not be able to get onto their internet connection. They may want to give you what, you know, what's available to guests and such. And in a lot of hotels and in a lot of places where it's more of a public internet connection, they're actually checking and throttling the amount of bandwidth that you can use. And there was one hotel when we had stations up in Syracuse. We have a Comrex access. I took it with me for fun and I tried it at the station. The thing was rock solid. I kept it up for 8 hours straight. Didn't see one glitch. Took it to the hotel, plugged it in. It was like every 5 minutes, there was this 2 second glitch that just completely wiped out the data. And all I could figure was that, you know, the service of the hotel was actually looking at the data bandwidth and taking a look at what was being used and making adjustments and throttling things up or back. And it was consistent. And it didn't matter if I used their real IP service, which was a dedicated IP, or if I used their, you know, the normal IP service that Joe Average in the hotel would click on. Nothing I did made the thing last. But in situations like that, the POTS codecs come in very handy. Also, Kirk, what you might want to mention with the modems, they're regular modems also optimized for asynchronous data instead of synchronous data. And we're looking for synchronous data with the With coming back to the station, because if you're on an internet connection, a standard internet connection, and you're maybe listening to something with Windows Media Player, if a packet gets waylaid or if a packet gets lost, the computer can go back and say, hey, I'm missing packet 25, send it to me again. And the server at the other end will do that if it still has packet 25 available, and you listening on the other end, you don't know. But that's why a lot of streaming services have a lot of latency and delay. In broadcast, 25 seconds would be unacceptable. We need it, within a half a second, maybe 3/4 of a second max. So we need synchronous data, and there's no chance for a resend. So those modems required a lot of tweaking.
Yeah. You're exactly right. So you're still using some POTS codecs from time to time when you need them. Mr. Tarr, you guys still using POTS codecs?
Oh, yeah, we use them all the time. They're just so convenient. Everybody's got still, believe it or not, fax lines and phone lines laying around. And if I have to put one in, it's relatively inexpensive. I mean, relatively speaking, it's $150 or something to get a POTS line put in. Because the thing about public Wi-Fi is I've found that it just still is not up to par yet to keep up with what we're sending. And unless I can really be assured that the data that we have at the location is good, it's not getting choked by something, isn't going to get flooded by somebody on an iPhone or something, I get real nervous about it. Even using I have a POTS codec that will actually operate over GSM as data.
Yeah.
And even then, I have to make sure that it's going to be in an area where we're not going to get a lot of phone traffic that's going to kill the data. So, I still find that in most cases, ISDN or POTS is still preferable until we can get down to, as we were just talking about right before the show, right after the show, controlling that endpoint at the remote site, at the broadcast site. I can control the switches and the routers and the cabling and everything in my building. I can't do that out at a broadcast site. And until I can really be assured that end is going to be clean, I have a hard time taking the chance on doing IP data there.
I was going to say, Kirk, being in New York and also having a couple of radio networks attached to the station, we like to set up hot backups, and it's very common for us to have an IP connection. Matter of fact, we did this with a remote last week. We had the IP connection, and we had a POTS codec as a backup because we had an IP and we had a telephone line. Today we did a remote. We had an ISDN line, and we ran the POTS codec as a backup because, once again, we had a phone line. I believe it's Friday, we have a remote coming up where I've got an ISDN line, I've got an IP line, and I've got a telephone line available. We're going to be running three codecs at the same time, and the board op will be able to choose whichever one if one falls apart. So,
sure. It depends on the financial critical nature of your remote, if you're going to have one connection or three connections. If it's got to happen and money's riding on it, then you don't want anything to take it off the air.
Well, you can't beat, when you get the codecs tuned right, you've got a good connection, you can't beat a POTS connection. I mean, they're very solid. Now, having said that, they're tricky to set up because they require the lines on both ends to be very clean, as well as the switching from point A to point B. And as you know, with the phone company, some of that infrastructure is old, or it goes through DA to AD converters to go on fiber. So there's a lot of opportunities there for data to get messed up. And, the codecs are good about renegotiating, but when they do that, it kills the audio while they renegotiate. So there's nothing worse than being in the middle of a live break and all of a sudden the audio goes away while the two sides renegotiate a slower or faster rate. But having said that, if you do some planning and you set it up correctly and you check everything and you test it, those POTS codecs are pretty darn reliable.
We could do an entire show on the technology of a POTS modem optimizing its connection from one end to the other. There's just a heck of a lot going on. And Chris, on the one hand, you said that POTS codec connections were pretty reliable. And I would only counter that by saying that, well, they're reliable if everything's reliable, but there's a lot of tweaking that the modems do when they set up their connection to eke out the very most amount of bit rate that they can, even having several different schemes for modulating and getting the bits from one end to the other. And so when you went back in the old days, when you used to dial up your ISP, and some people probably do still do that, and you hear all the squeak, squawk, you know, that's the modems trying to negotiate and discover the characteristics of the phone line. Does it roll off a lot here? Does it have any base response? Can I use any bit rates down there? What kind of twist do we have in or what kind of lack of coherency of time alignment do we have on this particular phone line? So there's a lot going on, and that's why sometimes you'd get a bit rate connection of, you know, 18 kilobits per second or 34, or once in a great while you might actually see a report of 56 kilobits per second happening. And I was never sure if the report you got from your modem software was the actual bit rate or the bit rate including the overhead that the modems are doing for error correction. But no matter, it's a lot of real good tech to try to eke out some bits over a line like that that's got only, you know, 3.3 or so kilohertz of audio bandwidth. There's just a lot going on there.
I'll tell you what, Tyline has a great feature on their codecs that has link quality. And essentially, it continually monitors things like, you know, data speed, how many errors there have been, drops, that sort of thing. And it gives you kind of a relative quality indicator of the local device and the device that it's talking to. And you can kind of look at it and go, okay, well, you know, I can be fairly assured that if a link quality on both ends is over 50%, we're probably going to be very stable at that bit rate. And that's also, too, when you set up these calls, is you keep an eye on that. You can set the device to a maximum rate, and you can say, okay, I'm okay with, you know, the data rate of 16 kilobits. It's providing good enough audio quality. And I know that low, we're going to have a really stable connection. It's not going to try to renegotiate. So I'm going to set the maximum level to be that. And what it'll do is it'll run at that rate, and that's where it'll stay. It won't try to, you know, renegotiate faster. And that also prevents those problems. So, there are some things that you can do ahead of time if you plan properly to really minimize the effect you're going to have.
One of the things that I want to ask you guys about is your experience with using your POTS codecs over POTS lines that aren't real POTS lines. Because our experience at Telos and me using, in fact, some other brands, Comrex and Tyline brands, has been that you need to be on a real, by golly, incumbent telco phone line. Oftentimes, we would take a POTS codec out to a university football field and go through the university's PBX. And that was usually about as successful as going through a hotel PBX. It often just wouldn't connect or would connect at a very pitiful bit rate. What about, because we get this question, we had gotten this question quite a lot a few years ago at Telos, what about connecting a POTS codec through a line that actually turns into VoIP, or maybe is using some other scheme that the phone company is using to get to eke several POTS connections out of a single pair? They have some techs for doing that. Any experience with VoIP lines?
It's kind of hit or miss. You know, sometimes, you know, what essentially what you're doing with that is you're using I think we showed one last week, the adapter that goes in line with the handset of the phone. And you're basically sending that data as audio through the handset of the telephone.
I was speaking of using a VoIP adapter, like a Vonage adapter or a Magic Jack.
Oh, right.
Something like that.
I've done that too.
Yeah. Yeah. But have you had success with that?
I actually have. You need to, the VoIP, especially if you get the right provider, there is in a lot of services, there's a setting you can set in the ATA, the analog telephone adapter. And I don't remember off the top of my head the algorithm that you use. I think it's T38. Which is their fax algorithm. And what that does is it actually reduces very much the bit rate of the codec so that it's faster. So there's not as much latency in encoding and decoding. It just starts sending the packets out. And I believe Vonage uses it for faxing. And again, it's one of those where it's hit or miss. Sometimes I've gotten it to work really, really well, and sometimes I couldn't get it to save my life. So it's been done, and you can do it.
I've got to point out what's happening when you're using. If you take a POTS codec to Tyline or Comrex or the Telos Export as examples, and you take one out on remote, and if you plug it into a VoIP to a POTS connection that ends up being transported by a voice over IP coded codec service, you know what happens? your analog audio comes out of your mouth, right, and goes to the microphone. And this audio goes into the box, whatever brand that it is. And this audio usually then is digitized for convenience in mixing inside with, you know, cheaper circuitry, all digital circuitry. And then this it goes into a codec in there that reduces the bit rate from, you know, about half a megabit per second for, you know, full bandwidth mono audio down to some very small bit rate using either a proprietary codec or something like HEAAC. So now you've got digital bits down at the level of anywhere from 12 to 24 kilobits per second, right? You got a chance of squeezing this through a modem. Then you've got a modem which has taken these bits, and what's it doing? It's actually modulating this digital information into an analog format that fits within 300 to 3.3 kilohertz so that it would pass through a circuit that's intended for the human voice. And it, of course, if it's going on a POTS connection all the way through to the other end, it's going to go through the standard telco A-Law or in other countries U-Law codecs, which are very predictable and very simple. And it's going to be carried as 64-bit connections from one place to another. These 64-bit digital connections are carrying a representation of the analog audio, which was modulated in such a way as to represent the bits that came out of the codec at the remote end. And all this happens in reverse at the studio. Okay? It's just crazy that what we had to do to get digital stuff through phone lines that were intended for analog. Now, if you add VoIP to that mix, now you're taking this analog audio that a voice was meant to go through, and you are then you're coding it using an algorithm. If you're not set for that fax mode that you mentioned, Chris, you're recoding it for an algorithm that was intended to carry the human voice in as few bits as possible across an IP connection. So my point is the chances of that working are less than the chances of it working across the telco connection that's got, you know, A-Law or U-Law codecs, which, again, are very predictable and operate at 64 kilobits per second. So, yeah, I can see where the fax option on a VoIP service is going to have a much better likelihood of working, since I'm pretty sure it's a simpler type of codec intended for good fax transmission.
Well, you know, Kirk, I think something else that comes into that, as you mentioned before, you know, hooking a a POTS codec to a PBX line. I wonder what the actual impedance is that the modem is looking into in some of these VoIP adapters and some of these PBXs, because from the phone company, you're guaranteed a certain resistance range, you're guaranteed a certain amount of capacitance on the line, and as we all know, adding capacitance to, you know, to a circuit will change the waveform, and so I'm wondering if that's maybe where some of the some of the problem can come in as well, just because these modems are made to look at a certain impedance. The waveform is expecting a certain impedance. And if God knows what it is when you're putting it in, that's immediately going to modify it.
Sure. And more than impedance, you know, there's the very complex impedance as the impedance changes across frequency ranges, which is, you know, what a hybrid is doing. It's trying to, to adapt itself to that. Well, you know, I we could talk about this for a long time because it's a complicated subject fraught with lots of interesting nuances. I just want to point out that there's a lot of tech in a POTS codec. In fact, I really believe that a POTS codec is really a more complicated thing than a typical IP codec. I really believe that. It's just incredible what people had to go through. I got to hand it to companies like Tyline that operate in the hinterlands of Australia over you know, phone lines that I think are really made out of barbed wire. That yeah.
Well, that's the thing. If you get it working over barbed wire, this stuff's a breeze.
That's right.
Yeah, there exactly you go. Right.
Oh, geez. So let's move into this this notion of I'll tell you what. Before we move into the IP codecs and the free one that Chris wanted to mention, I wanted to point out some important differences between POTS, ISDN, and IP type services, and the chief difference in these, it was mentioned earlier, synchronous versus non-synchronous, is that POTS is a guaranteed service. It's guaranteed by law in all, you know, states of the U.S. and probably other countries as well. You pick up the phone, you dial some digits, you're going to get a connection. And if you don't, you have legal recourse to get that connection working. If you have noise in your line, there, you know, the phone companies in most locales are required to provide you with working service. Same thing for ISDN. It's tariffed, and it's absolutely positively, if the phone company offers it to you, it's guaranteed to work. And if it doesn't work, you have recourse of getting it to work. None of that is true with IP. Now, in some cases, that's a bad thing. And in some cases, it's not such a bad thing. On the one hand, IP is not regulated, at least not in the U.S. at this time, like other telco services are. And that means that I believe that means that there's more innovation possible, and there's more possibilities for improvement. Oftentimes when regulations are set, the regulation for the minimum acceptable standard somehow becomes also the maximum possible as well. And so you end up with not much choice. Like if you want to order different flavors of ISDN, no, there's ISDN. Yeah, there's a lot of little options. If you want to order different flavors of POTS, no, it's POTS. It works the same everywhere. But if you want to order different flavors of IP, well, my goodness, depending on your locale, there's all kinds of different options depending on how much you want to pay. You can pay $20 a month in many places for a slowed down DSL. Not that DSL is slow, but you know, for a minimal DSL type of connection. Or you can pay more. Or you can, if you're in the right place, you can pay for fiber coming into your home or your business and get an enormous amount of bandwidth. So. But IP is not, at least in the U.S., not regulated as a common carrier like these other services are. So it's not guaranteed, but during the time left in the show, we're going to cover some ways that you can make it more reliable for the things that you need it to work for. So I want to get back around to that subject. My friends at Telos have done a lot of experimentation to find out where do the bottlenecks really occur, and are they under your control, and are there things that you can do about them. So this whole notion of IP codecs we've talked about before, and so we're going to cover some interesting things right now. Chris Tarr, why don't you tell us about this free piece of software?
Well, I had to go look it up. I had it written down. It's called Fidelifone, and I'm looking down. I can spell it out. Fidelifone. And it's Fidelifone.com. I'll put it out on the IRC channel here in a second.
Oh, just think of Fidel Castro. It's like Fidel iPhone. Fidel iPhone.
Fidel's iPhone, yes. Think of it that way.
That's how you spell it. Fidel iPhone.
We got an email here at the show months ago from the gentleman who's putting it together. And it's basically radio guys putting this together for streaming from computer to computer for doing live broadcasts. And the end result is supposed to be, when it's, you know, completely tweaked out and running, very low latency, high quality audio codec. And I've actually had some people that have tried it out. I've tried it out, and it works very, very well. It's obviously very new, and there's not a lot of features to it yet, but I see it as being, you know, real competitive to, you know, the bricks of the world. If you, you know, can't afford the hardware side of that, it should be I think it's going to grow to be a very good software solution. So hey, that's just one of many things.
Yeah, the software package Fidelifone, I take it probably is not using a rendezvous server. So you need to, if whoever you're calling, you need to make sure that their port is opened to the receiving device, right?
Right. And I think that's some of the things that they're going to work on in the future. This is just a very bare bones. If you know your tech and you're down and dirty, you know how to open up ports and things like that. This works very, very well. Yeah, and it's not using any. It's not, for example, you know, like with SIP, where you can have a server that you know kind of directs calls the proper IPs and ports and stuff. There's no registration like that with a third-party server. So, you know, for now, it's very basic, but it's real promising in the way that it works and how it operates. And I just find it interesting that, you know, somebody's actually thinking in that mode. You know, looking more about the hardware or the software rather, as opposed to a hardware solution.
Do you know what codec it might be using?
That I don't, and maybe at some point we'll track down the guy who's putting it together and get some of those answers. I haven't really delved.
It'd be great to talk to him. I think that'd be fantastic. We've had Tony Timmett from Telos on the show before, back when we did that live show from the NAB, and he did some splaining to us about some different codec possibilities that are appropriate for broadcasters. You know, low latency versus high quality, you know, when you want to make those kind of choices, and you know, these the codecs that people like Tyline, Comrex, and Telos use oftentimes are licensed codecs. You got to pay sometimes dearly to use them. Or you can also come up with your own codec. Comrex has the BRIC codec. Tyline, I'm very sure, has a codec that they've come up with themselves. And these have advantages in that you don't have to pay licensing fees, or, you know, those companies don't have to pay licensing fees. So it'd be interesting to find out what Fidelophone is using, if there's some kind of public, if they're using a public domain, like Ogg Vorbis or something like that. Or just some kind of version of a FLAC type of codec. That would be very interesting to find out. I know that the engineers at my employer, Telos, they work very hard to not only to get the codecs in there and working, but then to optimize the bits around that to take care of anomalies in the IP connection. So that if you miss some bits, is this a codec that does concealment? Error concealment. So there are codecs out there that if you miss a packet, they will fill in either with the previous known audio and just resample that, or fill in with some noise. And as long as the packet loss isn't more than 4%, 5%, 6%, most people can't hear it. And it's still usable audio up to upwards of like 10%, 15% packet loss. You can still use the audio and not be too disappointed with it. So that's probably the difference between where we get from a free product, which is really cool for low budget broadcasters. Hey, we might use those at my stations in Samoa, versus broadcasters that need to have, you need to take care of packet loss.
There's other things too. For example, like the Telos and the Comrex product, what you're also paying for is, you know, the plug and play. You've got the self-contained box, you put it in a rack, you take it out in your field bag, you plug in the plugs, you turn it on and it works. So you are, you know, that's some of what you're paying for as well. And I think with some of these third-party codecs, it's, you know, really for, you know, the smaller broadcasters who, you know, may not be able to spend the money on that, but have their own hardware and like to roll their own solution. And I think as we get more engineers who are comfortable with IT, I think we're going to see a little more of that, not only with things like codecs, but other things as well. Because it's getting to the point where a lot of engineering products are computers in a special box.
Hey, let's chat for a second about solutions. You know, one of the difficulties about using a laptop and, you know, Fidelophone or even paid for software on a laptop to do a live broadcast is the problem of getting broadcaster style audio from microphones or other types of players. Maybe you have a cassette or a solid state recorder. You go and do a coach's interview, bring it back to the press box to play it, you know, to add it to your halftime show. How do you get that audio from some kind of external mixer into the laptop? You know, the solutions used to be kind of ugly. Now we've got some mixers. Henry Engineering makes one that has a USB connection on it that'll plug right in. It looks like a sound card to your laptop, and you can get audio in that way. Chris, are you, Tom, are you using any external mixer like that?
Yeah.
Here's a, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, we use a device from M Audio that takes professional level in, gives you professional level out, hooks up to the USB port. You can, as far as the computer's concerned, it's just another sound card. So, you know, you can put it into Adobe Audition. You can put it into whatever you want to put it into. You can feed it down something like Fidelophone if you so desired. You have control over things, you know, over the levels. You can switch it between a professional level or a consumer grade level. It's actually quite a nice little box. We found these, and they're not that expensive. They're only about $200.
Chris, what about you?
I'll tell you what, Behringer makes a great consumer level device for $40, USB sound card. And the only, you know, the one downside to it is it does use RCA's ins and outs, but a lot of the devices that you're going to be using in these broadcasts have that available to you. And I actually used it for a while. I do record some radio commercials and things for some radio stations. And up until I got my desktop PC built, that's how I did it. I plugged it into my Mac and used a mixer with the RCA adapters, and it worked great. And it was only $40.
That Behringer box, does it only have RCA inputs, or does it also have a mic input?
The one I'm thinking of, I believe, just has RCAs in it.
Okay.
I'm actually looking at a couple on the website here, Kirk, right now. And let's see. They've got one that's just strictly RCAs in and out, which is analog, but they also have digital inputs and outputs on some of them. They've got several of them. And Behringer makes a pretty good product.
So it for some stations, it seems that your broadcasters, you're looking for the difference. Gee, do I want to carry a laptop with me to do the encoding and to connect to the IP connection or the POTS, or well, not the POTS line, but the IP connection via Wi-Fi, maybe 3G, maybe a wired connection. Carry a laptop and carry some kind of external mixer. Very likely that I would need that. Or do I want to carry a dedicated all-in-one box from one of the major manufacturers of broadcast gear? So I guess for a lot of broadcasters, it comes down to that decision. And actually, in my travels around U.S. and international, talking to broadcasters, which form factor would you like? I really got a lot of 50-50. I ran into engineers who, frankly, for some reason unknown to me, didn't mind their people taking laptops out and then plugging audio devices into them and using that as the device that everything plugged into that made all the functionality possible.
The microphone that I'm using now is a Blue Snowball plugged into the USB port of my computer. And I can certainly the quality is good enough to do some of the radio production that I do. So, it's even as simple as that. If you're not looking for mixing requirements, if you're just looking to do a live remote, the Blue Snowball plugged into USB port into a codec will work. Or there are some stations. I know we don't do a lot of these live anymore. But what we do is we'll take them and we'll actually pre-record the break, edit it on the laptop, and upload it, and then we just drop it in the station system.
Yeah, so it's live, but I mean it's done on location, but it ain't live, right?
Yeah, it's a quasi live remote.
yeah. Oh man, I remember back in the 80s when we were doing remotes with a Marty. This was at WKQQ in Lexington, Kentucky. The afternoon guy, it was so, I thought he was brilliant. Before his shift started, he would start his shift live on the air in the control room at the station. And then at some time he would leave the station and drive to the bar where we were doing the live remote from, right? So, somebody else would come in and run the board for him, actually play. We were playing records at that time. We were actually playing albums. He would go into the production room before his shift started and record as if he were driving in the car. Car sounds, honk, honk. And like, well, hey, this is Chris, and we're on the way to the so-and-so bar. I'm in the car right now. I want you to be sure and join us. Right now, here's the newest song from Billy Idol. So this is just great. This is the whole theater of the mind thing. He pre-recorded his breaks in the production room to make it sound like he was on his way. And that's one of the things that's just intrigued me about radio talent is coming up with things like that and letting the listeners think that, oh, wow, man, he's in the car. He's on his way to the bar. It's just, love talent like that. So, all right, so we've got this choice between in form factor. So you've got whole hardware kits. Again, the various manufacturers like Tyline, Comrix, Telos make a hardware kit you take out. You plug your mics and your headphones into it, and you stick a Wi-Fi stick on it, or maybe it's got Wi-Fi built in, or you plug it into an IP, and off you go, versus the laptop type of solution. And now some manufacturers even have an iPhone app where using the iPhone, they build a cradle that has XLR inputs. So you can plug a mic into your iPhone, got a little extra battery time. And the iPhone app has a basic codec going on there. And then you can 3G take this audio back to the device at the codec at the radio station to decode this. You guys haven't played with any of those yet? I think maybe Comrix has this and Tyline too.
Yeah, we've played with it with the Droid version for Comrix. It actually works pretty well. I found that my phone, the Sprint Evo Evo, whatever they call it. The microphone tends to be a little bit on the hot side, and the frequency response on the mic isn't that great. My assistant, Dennis, however, he's got, I think it's one of the Motorola Droids. It works very, very well and actually sounds pretty good when it's on the board. Latency is about 2 seconds turnaround time, because of the data processing. But it's impressive for what it is, and as a first thing, it's impressive.
With a 2 second delay round trip, is that appropriate for a real two way conversation, or is that best for a let's go out to Shea Stadium now and we got this update from Bob, and Bob does his update without much two way interaction, and then we return it back to the station.
Exactly what it's intended for. It's not intended to do a live man on the street thing. Depending on the talent on each end, they could probably do it with the 2-second thing. Let's face it, television's been doing that with satellite links for years. I call it the Dan Rather effect. Hey, let's go out to Kirk Karnak. Kirk, what do you have to say? 1-1000-2-1000. Kirk talks. Hey, I'm going to throw it back to you. 1-1000-2-1000. Hey, Kirk, and before you go,
it's kind of like our podcast here with Skype.
That's right. Hey, Ken, back at the Twit Network, why don't you pop that URL up that I put there? It's a Comrex. It's a picture of the Comrex product, the software for the Android phone. So this is a professional kind of product that it's the Access Reporter codec from Comrex, and I will point out that Tyline has a similar application as well. And pretty sure with the Tyline, I assume with the Comrex too, you can record locally with it and upload it, or you can do it live, whatever way suits you better in your particular application. So those are some.
One thing we found out with the Comrex version, it uses a slightly different port than the normal Access the normal port that the Access uses. Unfortunately, when we downloaded it, it wasn't clear. So we gave Tom Hartnett a call and said, "Tom, what's going on here? Oh, you got to open port so and so. They forgot to put it in the literature." But once we opened the port, it worked out very well.
Yep, and you know this whole deal of people who are tuned into this podcast probably understand IP addresses and ports and port forwarding just fine. But there are certainly plenty of radio, there's broadcast engineers, and there's a lot of people trying to set up remotes for radio stations who are not broadcast engineers. And they need something as simple as Skype. And that's why the folks at Comrex have a rendezvous server for their remote solution. The folks at Telos have a rendezvous server. They call it a zip server. So you plug in to an IP connection, and as long as you can get out, it ends up logging in automatically to this rendezvous server, and then shows you your buddy list, your other studios. Probably can't say buddy list; that's probably trademarked by somebody. But it shows you your list of studios that your codec is authorized to call. Hey, you know what? We ought to move on to the subject about missing packets and getting your IP packets through, and where the bottlenecks usually come through. And as we gain more and more experience with many, many typical internet scenarios and connections, let's for the moment restrict this to wired connections, because there are so many things that can go wrong in a Wi-Fi environment. And I don't even want to get into the 3G and 4G environments just yet. So just strictly on the basis of a wired Ethernet environment at some place you want to do a remote broadcast from, a stadium, the car dealer, the bowling alley, wherever it may be, you may have access to a wired LAN. And the point that I want to make is, if you were to know, if you know that you're going to do a broadcast over an IP connection, a wired IP connection from some place on a consistent basis, the general advice is that, the safest way to do that is to get your own connection, get your own cable modem, get your own DSL drop. Yeah, it costs money. It's generally going to cost less than an ISDN line, may even cost less than a POTS line on an installation basis. But you want to get something that only you are going to be using. You're not going to be sharing your data with, I was with Marge in accounting, who's going to be uploading the sales report for the week during the exact time that you're trying to do a break, that you're trying to do a live remote broadcast. So obviously, a good way to do this is to have your own drop. Back in the earlier days of IP audio remotes, I remember working with a station in New Orleans. We were using the Zephyr Extreme from Telos, which has always had an IP audio connection on the back of it, and talking to the engineer there and asking him, okay, you say you're using this for like a 4-hour long remote, and this is just kind of what I would call a dumb IP codec. It doesn't have any intelligence for trying to handle errors and error corrections. I'm speaking of the Telos Extreme. Again, I work for the company, so I'm familiar with this product. But there's no error correction going on here. So if the connection's got to be good, and there's no rendezvous server with that product, so you've got to make sure the ports are open at the other end and forwarded to the supposedly the Extreme at the other end. But if you've got a dedicated DSL drop at each end, and presumably the same carrier for both of them, your chances of having uninterrupted and undelayed data packets are pretty good. Pretty good. And so it's your chances are good that you can run a high bit rate, you know, 128, maybe 256 kilobits per second on your audio. So you're going to get great audio quality. And you can usually run the buffer down pretty low. Now, you're not going to get a chance for resends of audio packets if the buffer is very low or if it's UDP. The scenario changes, though, if we go to a shared environment. So if we want to do a live broadcast from the Ford dealer, but we're not going to get our own DSL drop. We're going to plug into their network. And, you know, who knows, maybe they're on AT&T DSL, and maybe at the radio station, what we're going to connect to, even in the same town, is on, you know, Comcast cable or Verizon or something. It's a different carrier. Well, now we've got a lot more complication going on. We have the contention for packets being sent and received through the router at the Ford dealer, and then we have the connection of the AT&T and the Verizon, or AT&T and Comcast somewhere, May East, May West, maybe somewhere else, and then we have the contention for the router packets back at the radio station, if that's not a dedicated drop for the purposes of doing live remote broadcasts. So what can you do about all that? Well, here's where I'm getting around to. More and more and more routers, even simple routers for homes, have the availability of packet prioritization. A lot of them call it QoS. You know, I'm not sure I'd really call it QoS, quality of service, because it's not really, really QoS. It certainly doesn't carry all the way through from one end to the other, unless you're using a service like MPLS on your connection. But again, we're borrowing somebody else's connection in the case of going to the car dealer. So if you have access to the router, and certainly do your own router at the radio station, maybe you can persuade the people at the remote broadcast site to, hey, let me have access to your router. I'm just going to prioritize my packets. You guys won't notice any difference. So you can prioritize your packets coming from a given MAC address of a device, or a given physical port, or in some routers, you can prioritize it by the IP address or by the type of data, whether it's UDP data or whether it's in some routers, my router here at my house, I can define it as Skype data or VoIP data or gaming data for different games. These are all presets that are in the router. So I've optimized my router here at Harnack Central to prioritize the packets that are going over Skype, and also I've actually forwarded ports to the IP address of my laptop here, all in an effort to try to make sure that my router, if it sees packets to or from this Skype session, it's going to make those go first. It's going to put the others on hold and make those others go first. And if we can do that at both ends, then we have a much better chance of the packets getting through in a timely manner and not suffering from dropouts. This example that I just gave you on kind of a home router basis is perfectly applicable to a much more professional environment. And hey, if you're in the San Francisco area in November and you can come to the AES convention, I'm going to be giving a paper there that has to do with this exact subject. In fact, some months ago, we had Igor Zakina on this show talking about PungaNet in New Zealand. And one of the things that they do there, they weren't paying for high-priced data connections there in New Zealand to radio stations. They were paying for kind of mid-priced ones with no packet prioritization available from the carrier, but they used a router that allowed them to prioritize the packets, and they made the audio packets, the real-time things, have complete priority in and out over the other data that may be coming in and out, you know, file uploads and email and web surfing and things like that. The people doing files and emails, web surfing, they never notice the difference. But making sure those audio packets can go when they want to can make a big, big difference and get you some uninterrupted audio. So solve the bottlenecks at the local ends, at both ends of the connection. Your chances of having bottlenecks in the middle from your provider are actually fairly small, at least in modern countries and modern providers. So there's my monologue. Chris Starr, why don't you take off on that and tell me if you agree or disagree.
Oh, I completely agree, but I would take it a step further, at least in the broadcast environment, is don't cheap out on routers. There is a difference. Sometimes you can find a real good consumer or prosumer level router and you get lucky. Oftentimes, though, you know, as soon as you start flooding those routers with packets for streaming and things like that, you start to beat on them, they lock up. or they start having routing issues. And I found more than once that just simply replacing the router with a higher grade one solved the problem. And, you know, even better if you can find a managed one, especially if you're going to be doing this on a regular basis on the broadcast side. You know, do your homework on the networking side and the broadcast of the studio side, because you can control that. If you put in high quality switches and you know, you do your wiring properly and that sort of thing, I can guarantee you, you're not going to have any bottleneck issues, especially with the codecs getting more and more efficient with bandwidth. You'll have plenty of bandwidth in those switches to handle whatever you're going to throw at it, but it has to be smart. It has to route traffic properly. And I would take that real quickly too with remote broadcasts. If you can bring your own, if you can find yourself a really decent small router to bring with you and use that, you can kind of control it that way as well. So it's all about, you know, it's all about the routing. And it's real easy to buy a cheap router off the shelf for $40, but I'll guarantee you, you're going to have drop packets and you're going to have routing issues.
Oh my gosh, I got to agree with you completely. And, you know, here at the Harnack Ranch, I bet you I have gone through 20 routers in the last 10 years. It's just hard to find something. You know, my favorite router for the longest time was a Linux-based software router in my own beige box. It was the Coyote router. I love that thing. It was simple enough for a guy like me to figure out, and it worked just fantastically. I've tried the Astaro product. I really like that, but frankly, it's a little over my head. So it was a little tough for me to set up all the things that I wanted. I've got a Linux router by Cisco. Now, one of their little, you know, clamshell, one of their thin things, and it's one of the more expensive ones. I like it a lot. It's got a lot of features, plenty of port forwarding available, but once in a while, it gets really stupid, and it quits handing out DHCP information, and it just seems to get really, really dumb. So once in a while, got to reboot it, and everything's fine after that. Tom, what's your finding about this? Do you have a recommendation along those lines?
Well, I mean, you're right. You get what you pay for. Here at home, and actually at WOR, we're using it's a small office router with the Linksys name on it, but made by Cisco. And these routers actually have been pretty good. I can't remember the last time I rebooted the one here at home, and the one at WOR, I think in over the last 2 years, I've rebooted once.
Can't complain. Is one of the RV models, like an RVS 42 or 48?
It's an RVS 4000. RVS 4000. Yeah. And I mean, the thing's great. It's got a lot of port forwarding. It's got a lot of smarts. It's got a lot of neat things it can do. But for overall, I mean, just to plug it in and make it work, it there's not much to it. But you can get real deep into it if you want to. And you can maintain it externally. It has remote. You can do remote maintenance on it if you'd like. I usually keep ours locked down, so we can only get into it from the internal network. But I mean, we've got 10 megabit service at WOR, and this thing just sits there and runs. It just sits there and runs. No, we've tried. Yeah, I've tried like the Blue Home-based Linksys units here at home, and I can't tell you how many times I had to reboot those in any given couple of week periods. And but this little gray thing just sits here and runs. I can't complain.
Yeah. I agree completely. Hey, did you notice where the conversation led to? Here we are, three broadcast engineers yapping about, you know, Marty's and POTS lines and remotes, and the conversation always turns to IT, doesn't it?
Has to, because everything is IT nowadays. I mean, the transmitters, the audio consoles, the audio playback system, everything has an IT base to it. You can't get away from it, including even the satellite receivers for satellite-based programming. They report back to the to home base if there's a problem. Chances are you'll get a call from the satellite provider or the network saying, you know, we need to send you a new receiver. Something's up with yours. And there are, I know of at least one receiver out there right now that actually has an IT backup. So if the satellite signal goes away, it'll revert to an IT signal.
Somebody told me 20 years ago that in 20 years, we'll no longer have television cameras. We'll have computers that make TV pictures. And we'll no longer have radio transmitters. We'll have computers that transmit RF.
And a long time ago, somebody told me you'd be able to download Springsteen's latest album on your computer.
And you can, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Scary, isn't it?
Hey, we got to go. Mr. Tarr, thank you for being with us from
Close enough. Thank you.
Yeah, Maguanago. Okay.
There you go.
Gee, money. We're going to have a session beforehand where you can teach me about words like that. Gesundheit. Glad you could join us. And keep geocaching, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week. You'll be with us?
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for your contribution. I really appreciate it. Tom Ray, thank you for being with us from the Hudson Valley of New York.
Well, thanks for having me and putting up with my sense of humor.
Well, bring it along next time, too. And maybe Chris Tobin will be back from France next time, and we will talk to him about his experience in the Gay Pally.
And he'll talk funny. Ho, 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 ho.
All right. Hey, you can download the show from the website thisweekinradiotech.com. You can subscribe from the iTunes store absolutely free and have it show up automatically as soon as it's edited and available. And of course, we invite you to join us every week here on the Twit Network to watch us make fools of ourselves and talk about radio technology. That's it for This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks for joining us. I'm Kirk Harnack. Bye-bye.
That's all the bandwidth we can pilfer this week. Another twit has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This Week in Radio Tech.
Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes store. Soliciting is strictly encouraged. If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here. Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny LaPay Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.